Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I want to give a big thank you to Jerry Grunewald, who will be speaking with us this hour. Jerry is Vice President of Operations at Invista. So this interview is an element of IRI's Digital Transformation Community. The DXC is a community of organizations that are on the journey toward digital transformation. Through the DXC, you can access case studies with fresh, relevant content. The latest one on USG is available on our website, and we have two more coming out this year, and very soon, I promise. We also have a virtual conference dedicated to digital transformation. That's Digital Futures, and that's taking place October 12th through the 15th. Many of your organizations have complimentary registrations you can use, so you can attend for free. We have facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics. We have one coming up this Friday on COVID-19. That's kind of our standing topic right now. And we have workshops that we'll be coming out with later this year. And then we also do webinars with thought leaders like we're doing today. These always take place on the third Thursday of the month at 12 o'clock Eastern. And I'll be sure to sign all of you up to receive updates from the digital transformation community. If you don't want them, just let me know. Right. Couple housekeeping items before we start the conversation. So first, this session is being recorded and you will get a link to the recording. We will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there will not be any visuals here today. Second, please hold all questions until the end. Once we open the floor to questions, you can type your question in and I will read it out for you, or you can raise your hand using that function on the dashboard. All right. All that stuff is done. So now we can talk to Jerry. Jerry, again, thanks for joining me today.
Super. Thanks, Lee. It's great to be here with the IRI community.
Awesome. Thank you. So let's get into the first question. So what were Invista's first steps toward digital transformation and what was the catalyst?
Sure. So Invista is part of Koch Industries, which is one of the largest privately held companies in the U.S. And about 3 years ago, we, along with our sister companies, were challenged by our most senior leadership, actually between particularly Mr. Koch himself, that we were not moving fast enough in the digital plant space. So corporately, there was an effort launched called the Transformation Imperative for the overall company. And there were some key phrases in that challenge that really stuck out. Mr. Koch actually used the phrase that the ground is crumbling beneath our feet. And we must transform or we'll end up in the dumpster. So as you can imagine, that spurred an effort among all the operating companies to develop a plan and to get moving. And Invista was actually a little bit late to the game. We framed our effort in 2018, and I came into this new role for operations transformation in the fourth quarter of 2018.
Wow, that's quite the challenge he put to you all. That's do or die. You know, I guess he's right. So how have you structured your strategy?
So we always start with vision. So in this case, what does operations transformation mean to us? And, you know, where are we going to focus our efforts for our 13 global sites? And I've actually had the opportunity in a couple of roles in my career to put together a new vision. And I've always found it's important to strike a balance between being specific enough to guide action, but broad enough to enable the teams to think big and evolve their learning. And, you know, I think that's especially true in the digital space because it's moving so fast. You know, what's new and novel today will probably be passed by and be outdated, you know, maybe 6 months from now. So we started by doing a lot of listening and learning from our own Invista folks, from colleagues in our sister companies, from lots of external folks. And by January of last year, we framed our vision to transform the way we interact with our operating units. And we wanted to actually build off some things that we had underway. So we're trying to build off of our culture of what we call ownership-based work systems or principled entrepreneurship of all of our employees. And we also had an emerging capability in data science. So we wanted to take those two capabilities we had and then focus in four transformation work streams. So I'll just kind of briefly go through those four work streams. So first of those is process control. So things like advanced process control, anomaly detection, automated procedures. Second is connected worker. So focusing on bringing the right info to the right person at the right time in the right context. So things like AR and VR for training and field procedures, a lot of mobility tools, mobile dashboarding tools. The third one is material flow automation. So things like AGVs, robots and cobots, but also camera-based tools where you can replace human visual inspection with a camera and a machine learning algorithm that can create a flow of data from what was previously just periodic inspection. And the last one is that kind of broad category of asset performance management where, you know, some people call that the sensorification of the fleet, the myriad of sensors that can provide profiles of our equipment and enable us to move from reactive to predictive, prescriptive, you know, hopefully even prognostic-based maintenance. And kind of our overall tagline is we try to drive progress in those four work streams is we're trying to convert data to knowledge, knowledge to action, and action to value. And one of the early things we stressed is early on we were called the innovation team we kind of wanted to say, no, we're not the innovation team, we're the transformation team, because our goal is not to just innovate around the edges. We're truly trying to transform the way work is done at all levels of the organization to drive different actions, which can then hopefully drive transformative value.
Wow, that's a pretty bold statement. That's awesome that you've been able to do that.
Mm-hmm. So we're still a work in progress, that's for sure.
Aren't we all? So how has COVID factored into all of this? You know, are you using it as an accelerator?
Sure. I mean, obviously, it's been a big impact on us, as I'm sure everybody else on the call, you know, no doubt. You know, in Envista, we had some nice run over the last couple of years. 2018, 2019 were very strong years for our business. And we kind of came into 2020 with some real momentum. And obviously, COVID has changed the trajectory of that a lot. Many of our in-use markets have certainly seen a demand disruption. Fortunately, we're still very much committed to our long-term goals of transformation, kind of like I articulated on the previous question. But we've certainly been prioritizing programs that can deliver near-term value when demand is lower, and that's actually enabled us to kind of use COVID as a bit of a catalyst in that environment. At a number of our plants, we've been able to take folks out of their normal roles and put them on agile sprint teams to complete transformation projects in our four work streams much faster than we had originally planned. This has enabled us to accelerate, you know, value capture in process control and field automation in particular. Fortunately, you know, as you know, we came into 2020, we had a number of, you know, what I call shovel ready projects that needed resources, and when resources became freed up, we were able to direct folks to those efforts. We've also had some cases where we've loaned folks out to some of our sister companies to drive value there, and as those sprint teams complete, you know, we can bring back that knowledge that they experience with some of our you know, colleagues across the company, and actually bring a finished product back that we can then implement in our assets. So we're certainly trying to, cut bait while you can fish at times. And we've certainly seen some success in that able to drive that both long-term and then deliver, you know, shorter-term value as well.
That's great. It's a nice silver lining given everything that's going on. So, we've heard from Jerry Kane, author of The Technology Fallacy, and I interviewed him in January, I think it was, about the importance of people, processes, and technology in digital transformation. And I want to take each aspect and talk through your approach to each of them. So the first one is, you know, how do you handle the people aspect of everything?
Sure. Well, first of all, I need to thank IRI because I first encountered Professor Kane at one of the annual meetings a couple years ago, I guess. And you know, his framework really clicked with me. You know, we call it digital transformation, and obviously technology is driving that. What technology is capable of doing is causing our need for the ground to be crumbling beneath our feet, and a need to transform. But to implement it, it's people, processes, and technology in that order. You got to start with the people, and Jerry Kane, certainly makes that front and center. You have to start with your culture, and for us, we try to define that as people at all parts of our organization, all 5,000 members of Envista, 120,000 members of Koch Industries, to have a contribution mindset. To come in and say, I can make my work area, my team better, and I want to do that. I want to contribute to that, and to really embrace being a lifelong learner. I mean, that's one of the things that you really see in this whole digital space is what you learn in school, what you learn when you were trained, to be whatever your role is, an operator, a mechanic, an engineer, a product developer. You can't just say, well, I learned this job 3 years ago and I'm going to do it for the next 20 years. No, I mean, things are changing way too fast for that. And there's an absolute imperative that folks embrace, continuing to learn. Because if you do that, then you can change, how work is done, change the actual work processes, change the work itself by using the latest and greatest technology. So that's why we say, it starts with the people and their own mental models of wanting to be a learner, then changing their work processes using, the technology. Because if you start with the technology, you definitely get some incremental improvement. But if you really want transformative value, you got to first start with the people.
Definitely. So what about the processes?
Sure. So you absolutely have to change the work and the work processes itself. So when we talk about moving from data to knowledge to action and value, the key piece of that is the action, and you have to take different actions, to actually do different things that you did in the past to get that transformative value. And for us, a great example of that, one of the early things we focused on was we wanted to essentially eliminate or dramatically change operator rounds in our plants. So I'm sure like many folks out there in the manufacturing space, part of of your operator's job, three times a shift, maybe, hour and a half, 2 hours a day, is literally go be out in the field and look at things and take measurements and check on things. And, as we looked at this, last year at many of our sites, we were still doing, routine operator rounds with a pencil and a clipboard, like we had been doing it for 50 years, in some of our plants. And, we installed industrial Wi-Fi. It was one of our enabling efforts in the digital plant space at all of our sites. And so we had that capability out there, and then we wanted to focus on operator rounds. And so the first thought, that people encountered was, well, let's use our new technology, and let's get iPads for all of our operators, which we had intended to do. But the thought was, well, now we can do that operator round on an iPad rather than a pencil and a clipboard, and thus we will have digitized our round. But if you think about it, that's not really transformative. It's incremental at best. So we really wanted to focus on changing the work process itself. So we conducted a host of agile efforts that we call value creation events, where we really dived into the details with the people, with the operators and mechanics themselves, into what are you actually doing around? Why do you do that? And what we found is, there was a lot of things that, didn't need to be done in those work processes. A lot of the information we were collecting was already in the DCS. Samples we were taking were already being measured by analyzers. But, we had kind of always did it that way because that's the work process. That's what we did. So, we really focused on starting with those work processes to change that. And then we said, all right, here's all your iPads. Now go out and do these improved work processes in a digital way with the technology. And that really enabled us to free up, you know, about 20% of an operator's job. So now when they go out in the field, it's not like they don't go out in the field anymore, but now they're going out with a purpose. You know, the things I'm looking at really need my attention, rather than, you know, 80-90% of the things they were looking at were already known other ways. And, you know, when we're just a check the box, yeah, it's still there. Yeah, it's still running type thing. So, you know, so in that work process, you know, engage the people, change the work process, then apply the technology to make the whole thing transformational.
So what was their reaction to this change, you know, being given these iPads and these different marching orders?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think folks, you know, we got a lot out of, and we still continue to do these so-called value creation events. You know, they're really agile sprint teams, but just really getting people together to really say how can you do your job better, you know, and be a part of that. I mean, I think a lot of times in the past, you know, we would maybe launch a team, you know, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, we were really big into Six Sigma. I was a black belt and a master black belt. And we would be kind of doing things to the organization rather than, you know, them pulling and doing it with me type thing. So we found these agile teams and approaches really help folks embrace it themselves. And again, that culture of ownership-based work system. This is my job. This is my plant. You know, this is my area, and I want to make it better. And then, you know, help me make it better with new technology, rather than just, you know, hand me an iPad and say go do what you always did before, but now with a new tool. So you know, it's we found that it's a really good entry point to digital transformation is this focus on change the work process. And the whole goal of those VCEs is not to come out with a to-do list. It's actually to come out with a to-done list. You know, you're getting the right group of people together and you're empowering them to make changes. I mean, you know, we're not leaving, you know, this effort. You know, usually some of them can be, depends on how big of the scope you're looking at. Some can be, you know, 4 hours long, some can be 3 days. But when it's over, you've actually done something. And you make the change that night. I mean, so we've had cases where we did one in 4 hours and the oncoming shift says, this is the new way we're doing rounds. And because we just decided it, you know, 4 hours ago. And so really try to drive that sense of urgency and where folks can really take their own personal action to improve their space.
That's great. That must have been really empowering for them.
It is, and you know, and again, you know, we still got a long way to go yet, but we are creating some momentum with that.
That's great. So, what about the last element, the technology side?
Sure. So, I really like Professor Kane's concept of technology affordances. And as a matter of fact, when you interviewed him a couple months ago, whenever that was, I actually asked him about that because he didn't mention it in the to me, it was one of the more powerful things of his presentation. And you know, obviously it was only an hour interview, so he didn't get to include everything. But that concept of what can new technology afford you to do that you couldn't do before. And I really think that's a great way to think about it, because it's not always obvious at first. So I'll give you a little detail. I mentioned earlier we installed an industrial Wi-Fi in each of our plants, and we recognized that this was a new technology that could afford us to do things in Kane's sense that we couldn't have done before, because it's so foundational. But it ain't cheap. I mean, you know, for our larger sites, I mean, that's several million dollars per site to install. And so we were, you know, rolling up, if you add it all together, it was close to $20 million to do Wi-Fi at all of our sites. And the way we would normally do, you know, any project, certainly one of that size, is you'd go very detailed analysis to say, here is all the different things that we're going to do to capture value from this, you know, from this project. So, you know, get very specific on use cases of, you know, we're going to, this will now enable us to do these 10 things. We're going to track these and show, you know, who's accountable to driving that. And, you know, and that's not a bad way to, you know, to do any project. The problem, though, is when you have something enabling where it's new technology in Professor Kane's sense that can afford you to do things, you don't even know what those are yet. You know, you have to almost see it in place for you to be able to articulate and to capture the value. So we, again, thinking around changing our work processes, we changed the way that we were going to authorize such enabling new technology projects. So, you know, rather than drag all the sites through the detailed profit and loss statement of a project and look at every possible return idea, all we said is that the bet is that each site needed to pay off their investment in 2 years, and those that did that would be recognized. Those that paid it off in 1 year would be recognized, and those that took 3 years or longer would also be recognized, just different type of recognition. So it was really just a bet saying, you know, this is enabling, get your people thinking, do some VCEs and other types of tools that, you know, once you got it, you see what's possible. And kind of just like Kane postulated, all the sites found ways to capture value, almost all of which were not on their original list. You know, as they got the tool and they started to do something, they said, oh, we could do this now. Look what we could do now. You know, there's countless examples of where to put a sensor or a camera out before you had Wi-Fi would be really, really expensive. You'd have to run a cable from the electrical control room, a half a mile. And, you know, that one particular piece of information, you know, would cost you $50,000. Now in industrial Wi-Fi, you can put them everywhere. And there were just a handful of, or not a whole lot more than a handful of ways to capture value that folks hadn't even thought about now that they had it. And those were fast. And we found all sites paid it off in 2 years, and more than half of them paid it off in less than a year, just by what they were able to do. And it's ongoing. I mean, they're continuing to find ways to capitalize on that investment. So I think it's a good example of, we changed the work process, and that affected how we approach technology.
That's great. You really hear kind of that entrepreneurial culture coming through, especially with that.
Yep. You know, and almost all of that didn't come from my small central team. That came from the sites themselves saying, you know, well, we could use it for this, or, you know, and then knowledge shares, you know, well, it's, you know, the Orange, Texas plant is doing that. Maybe the Camden, South Carolina plant could borrow from them, type thing. So it really became a good collaborative environment.
That's great. So, I mean, that sounds like a great success. You know, what are some of the other successes that you've seen? And we'll do the challenges too for everyone.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things that I think is helped contribute to our success is, after about a year where we had this very focused ops transformation vision. So we said, you know, very specifically, this is what we're driving in a transformation space. We actually tweak that vision again in January of this year, where we moved away from a separate ops transformation vision to an overall new operations vision for all of the operations organization, incorporating those four work streams. And I think that was important to us because there for a while it was, you know, well, these are, you know, Grunewald's bets. They're different from the site's bets. And you know, we're all in ops, and you know, that's where we should be going. Lee, you can still hear me, right? Because I see a webcam bobble here.
I can still hear you, but I can't see you anymore.
Okay, well, as long as you can hear me, that's good.
Yep, so, you're coming back. There we go.
So, you know, going to that single ops vet, vision really helped, kind of drive transformation is by all the team members, not just a small central group. And that's really been important as we deal with COVID as well, you know, because obviously we can't travel. I mean, you know, my team and I, me personally, I normally travel 3 weeks a month. Between our sites, vendors, conferences and things like that. I mean, that's just the way we did things. And now we happen to be back at the office, but we're not traveling anywhere. We're not going to the sites. So we have to have all of our folks, owning the imperative to transform themselves and to use the power of today's technology. So one of the tools we've been using to highlight that, another one of our, successes or at least positives, is we make great use of our ops Yammer site. So it's one of the Microsoft 360 tools, and we put everything there. I mean, we make a lot of videos, the success stories, ways to share knowledge, and we put that on our Yammer site. And then here lately, over the last 10 weeks or so, we started something, and it's a little corny, but it's actually been successful. We call it Tuesday's Transformer. So every week we actually feature a little story, a paragraph, a picture, a little description of an individual or a small team that's really kind of getting it and it's got an example of how they transform themselves and transform the work process. And we typically try to focus, operator, mechanic. That's kind of embracing the vision, kind of to show what good looks like, and encourage other folks to get on board. And initially we say, well, a month seems too long. Let's try a week. I hope we have somebody to come up with every week. Now I got like a long backlog. I mean, I got 20 names, and people say, well, how come my story hasn't been on yet? And it was like, well, you're number six on the list, so 6 weeks from now, type thing, you'll be featured. So we may even try to go Tuesdays and Thursdays Transformer here, but just trying to kind of keep it fresh and really show that, this isn't something driven by, headquarters. This is something that we can do on our shift, in our site, our little work team, and really transform.
That's great. All right, so we're gonna do the challenges now. So
sure.
The less rosy side.
Absolutely. Well, certainly, particularly at the beginning, but even true now as well. People say, well, this is great. Hey, I'm interested. I'm excited. I get what you're talking about. I hear Mr. Koch's challenge, but we're busy. We don't have the time to do that. I got five things to do and you're giving me three more, so how am I going to do that? And so we've really had to really get people to stop using time as an excuse, and really say that I'm not telling you, here's number five, six, and seven on your list of four that you should be working on. This is really the way to do those four better, faster, in a transformative way. And maybe there's some things on that list of four you got that you shouldn't be doing, or you need to be rethinking your work processes, how you're doing that. So don't look at transformation, the digitization effort as something additional. Look at it as the way to do what you're trying to do, better, faster, more effective. And one of the mental models, we talk a lot about mental models, we ask folks to look at what you're currently trying to do in your work, whatever your role is, kind of plot that on a bell curve, where value is on the x-axis on the y-axis, and time is on the x-axis. And if you just plot your work, no matter what, whatever your role is, wherever you are in the organization, there's probably some aspects in the lower left hand of that bell curve that maybe you shouldn't be doing. Maybe there's maybe it's just repetitive, doesn't need to be done, can be streamlined, or maybe it can be done by somebody else in the organization. We talk a lot about opportunity cost, and time is your most valuable asset, and you get to choose how you spend it. So think about that. Maybe there's some things you're doing that you don't even need to be doing, or somebody else can do better. And then there's probably some other things in that curve, that bell curve, that really should be automated. I mean, if you think about robotic process automation tools, if you think about some of the other automation tools that we talk about in our four work streams. There's things that, you know, we should be, you know, the machine can do it better than the human type thing. And then there's things out on, you know, the other end of your bell curve that are quite value adding that you should continue to do and try to do more of. And those are probably the things that interest you the most, that you get excited about. So we've kind of used that model and said that, you know, if we get to where we want to get to, there's 60% that belongs in the first half of that, you know, curve where, you know, could be not done at all or be automated. And then you need to be focusing on how you're going to spend that 60%. So the way we draw that is that first curve is drawn in red, and the new curve, which is all the things that you can now afford to do because you've taken this approach, is the green. And so we talk about, you know, focus on your green curve. You know, what are the new skills that new capabilities that every person can learn and acquire in your green curve that enables you to ultimately add more value? And the whole purpose is to get people off this, I don't have time to do that. So my mantra, you know, there for a long time, I still say this, it's actually in my email signature. It's what's in your green curve. So instead of the commercial, what's in your wallet, you know, it's what's in your green curve. And you're supposed to have an answer to that. You know, you should be thinking about, you know, what are things that I can learn? What are you know, skills that I could grow myself or with my team in my green curve that will enable me to embrace this change? And, you know, again, COVID's kind of been a help with that. We've, you know, with a lot of folks work from home with, in some cases, you know, units not running as hard as they have in the past. We've been able to focus folks on their green curve skills and really try to expand learning. So that, you know, that's, you know, by far the biggest challenge. And then, you know, the other one is just, you know, how to keep communication fresh and everyone know what's going on. I mean, and that's hard in COVID time. You know, we're not going out to the sites and doing roadshows. So things like our Yammer site and, you know, tons of, you know, examples of what good looks like are trying to do that. But I do worry as you know, we're 5 months into what is still a long journey here in the new world order. And, you know, it continues to get hard to keep that story fresh and keep folks motivated and learning.
Definitely. It's a huge challenge. So switching gears slightly, you know, you've mentioned Koch Industries and, you know, hearing from Mr. Koch. So what do you think has been the impact of being part of the larger conglomerate that is Koch? And, you know, how is it, and particularly, how has it impacted your need and ability to form partnerships?
Sure. Well, it's enormously helpful, you know, in a couple of different ways. You know, particularly I mentioned around cross-company sharing. So, you know, like a lot of other big companies, but, you know, we really stress the power of knowledge networks across the companies. And we have one in the operations transformation space. So I meet monthly and sometimes, you know, more frequently than that with my counterpart across the other Koch companies, and for folks that aren't familiar, so George Pacific, you know, the paper company, Flint Hills Resources is a oil and gas company, Guardian Glass is an industrial, you know, glass for buildings, Molex is one of the largest electronics parts makers. You know, iPhone's got a ton of parts made by Molex in it. We have a fertilizer company, we have a transportation company, so it's quite a diverse range of industries that we are in, and so that's quite helpful because you know, is in this space, and you know, we do a lot of, you know, collaboration with you know, third party groups. You know, if you're going out to you know, a big vendor, you know, say like a Amazon Web Services, for example, you know, I'm not just going out as Envista with, you know, our 5,000 employees. I'm going out as you know, Koch Industries with 120,000 employees. So you can get, you know, a seat at the table and a chance to, you know, get high enough on a priority of a big player. And it's also very helpful with, you know, a lot of small players. I mean, in this space, I mean, there's you know, just a myriad of you know, very small startup companies that you know, are I got great ideas and you want to try to tap into that. And by being able to leverage across all my colleagues, you know, we get to knowledge share around what pilots they're doing. So if somebody's doing a pilot with a, you know, an augmented reality supplier, you know, I don't have to have, you know, my people on the ground knowing about that because, you know, I got a colleague over in GP that might be, you know, doing that. So we get to knowledge share that and learn from their pilots. And oftentimes particularly for a small player like that, it's attractive for them to say, well, gee, if I deal with you guys, I can see how this works in a petrochemical plant. I can see how this works in an electronics plant. I can see how this works in a med products plant. So it actually helps us, you know, to be able to, again, get the attention of a variety of providers because we can bring a lot to the table and help them show their tools in a whole lot of different ways. You know, just one of the other, you know, kind of small examples, but for folks on the phone, I'm sure you deal with this. You know, any one of these groups that you deal with, you got a whole new, you know, terms and conditions, you know, paperwork you got to get in place. Well, I can leverage that, you know, so if somebody's already working with Flint Hills Resources and they got their terms and conditions, chances are, you know, we can just adopt those and go forward. So, you know, it just increases our speed and our knowledge share and, you know, and our overall scope to be able to learn what's out there. Because, you know, that is one of the big challenges. This is a fast evolving, you know, space. And, you know, if you ever think, you know, oh, we got our plan, we know this is going to be our tool for blank, you know, I can almost guarantee you that there's probably another tool coming along not too far out in the future that you'll say, well, gee, maybe I want to do that. So really helps you kind of stay up to speed with what's going on. Again, particularly in this time of COVID where, you know, we're not out at a lot of conferences and things like that.
That's really interesting. I guess I hadn't really thought of that as something that would be open to you, but that's mm-hmm. great. So I'm going to open the floor for questions. And while everyone mulls over their questions, I've got just one more for you, Jerry. So I always ask this. So based on what you've learned so far, what do you recommend for other companies who are on their journey?
Sure. So, you know, obviously those, you know, focus first on the people in the process for the technology, you know, it's been helped us a lot. And I think, you know, the biggest thing is just get started. I mean, you in this space, you can wait a long time and try to get your vision perfect or your roadmap perfect. And you know, you won't. I mean, it's moving too fast. So it almost doesn't matter where you start, you know, if you got, you know, four work streams like us, or if you got one, you know, just get out there and start learning and pivoting and really be flexible. I mean, we talk a lot when we talk to vendors that we need plug and play alternatives. I mean, you know, I don't want to be locked into a single platform because, you know, I don't want to be locked into a 5-year deal with a vendor because, you know, I have no idea whether you're even going to be relevant in 5 years. So you know, try to look and collaborate with folks that can adapt to your platform and the platforms of others, and are willing to, you know, get in there fast and work with you type thing. A lot of collaboration in this space.
All right, and we've already got questions coming in, and the first one is from one of your colleagues, Joshua Nixon at Invista.
Hey, Josh.
So he asks, with VCEs and starting with people, you're able to create value at a single site. How do you scale that to other sites? Do you have to start?
Yeah,
he's got
ahead.
More. Yeah. Do you have to start with people each time, or is it always easily adopted once value is shown?
You would like to think it was easily adopted once value is shown, but a lot of times there's we don't have any sites in Missouri, but there's still a lot of people from the Show Me State who say, you know, well, you know, I'm not sure it was going to work in my site, even though it worked over there type thing. So there's always initial, you know, little grounding and showing. But one of the things that we've tried to do here lately is even broaden out the VC concept, which I talked about as value creation event. So now we're kind of calling it, you know, value creation environment. So you really want to
kind of move away from, you know, it's a fixed point in time event. These people came together and identified these things and did them, to how do we create at all of our sites a broader environment to want to both embrace change and to, you know, and to apply new learning skills. So and we're only a couple months into that. So trying to be able to leverage as much as possible, but yet have a recognition that you know, you're talking to, you know, B shift at you know, at a plant in Canada, and you know, yeah, you know, what they're talking about has been solved three times, and you know, by another shift in Texas, but it's new to them. so how do we get them grounded? And because what you really want is that personal connection, people to say, hey, this is you know, our unit, and we want to make it better, and this is a solution that that we can internalize. Again, that kind of do it with them rather than do it to them. And we've done a lot of that in the past, and it you might get some short-term value, but you won't get the long-term sustainable change.
That's great. Thank you. And we haven't gotten any other questions in so far, because obviously we covered all aspects of digital transformation, so we're good.
That's not true.
But I don't think we'll give everyone another couple seconds here to raise their hand or type something. Oh, Joshua is asking to have his hand to be unmuted. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute you there, Josh.
Hey, Jerry.
Okay.
Hey, one of the things you've talked about in the past, too, as well, that you didn't talk about here was scale, right? So how are you trying to scale the opportunities you've created?
Sure, and that's a great question, and I think, you know, relevant to all the groups out there. I forget what this article I read, it might have been from IRI. They talk about pilot purgatory, you know, that if you're doing a bunch of pilots, you know, and you get value, but you know, do you ever get beyond the pilot to you know, broader adoption across, you know, your platform type thing? And so so our theme coming into 2020 was scale, and that was pre-COVID, and we're still trying to keep that theme, you know, even, you know, during COVID, that you know, move beyond pilots to things that can scale broadly. And and so we actually try to, you know, even in the course of doing a pilot, think about, you know, hey, if this is successful, you know, how could this roll broadly across the company? And you know, some of that is just maybe if you're working with a vendor or a third party, you know, do they have the scalability to go broadly, or maybe is it something you need to have yourself? So so for example, in our camera space and our material flow automation work stream, some of our early pilots you know, used a huge amount of bandwidth. so we've got, you know, we got our new Wi-Fi in place, but this one camera is, you know, eating up a third of it type thing. And, you know, that's not going to scale. As a matter of fact, it's going to cause a problem with the rest of the site's efforts. So, so one of the things that we put in place, and I'm sure a lot of folks out there trying to do the same, is edge computing. So, so how do we install an edge network, which we now have, that enables you to send things directly to the cloud, not storing a lot of stuff on premise, and to do it in a fashion that that can keep up with, you know, we're not in a pilot, we're not going to have, you know, two cameras. You know, if we do this right, we're going to have, you know, 100 cameras, or, you know, way more than that even. So again, kind of just thinking about scaling to almost assume success and say, hey, this is probably going to work. So how do we do the one to many approach?
All right, fantastic. Thank you. So we've had questions pouring in now. So we've got, the first is Alexa Dembeck. So she's asked to be unmuted.
Hey,
so I'm going to go ahead and unmute her.
All right. Jerry, thanks for your insights. Really terrific to learn about your experiences. Can you make any comments around applying the same principles to an R&D environment versus a manufacturing environment?
Sure, and great to talk to you again, Alexa. Yeah, and I was, as you know, I came out of R&D, and you know, there's you know, certainly the tools for work processes have a lot of relevance to R&D. I know I know you guys in DuPont and other folks are doing a lot of work with camera-based observing experiments and other types of test analysis, and how can you digitize the what is a what previously was a visual observation and get a lot more information out of that. We talk a lot about, and I didn't mention it, but it's part of that asset performance management work stream, the whole concept of digital twins. And that's a very broad term, and I always ask folks to say which part of the digital family are you talking about when you talk about a digital twin? Because to me, there's at least four. There's an asset twin, which we do a lot of. There's a training twin. There's a process twin, and we in operations do all of those. The one that we don't do, but I think is very relevant in R&D, is the product twin. And so, can you actually look at your finished product and then have a complete digital environment of that? So when you change a parameter, and I think this has a lot of relevance in material science, which obviously Alexa for you guys in DuPont is very important. If you have a digital twin of a product and you then can change one parameter, how does that impact the performance of the broader piece? So I think that has a particularly lot of relevance. And then the whole AR VR space, I mean, I think again, thinking about how people would use a product or even conduct an experiment can be enormously helpful. We've been using some of the AR tools and the VR tools with our labs as well as we're training a new technique that you can actually get a lot of value out of using AR and VR in that space.
Very helpful. Thanks, Jerry.
All right, and so we've got another person who's going to be unmuted. So that's Jeff Strahan from Milliken. So Jeff, I'm going to go ahead and unmute you now.
All right, Jerry, really enjoyed your thoughts so far. Question back to the people. So you described how you worked with the team at your manufacturing sites. My question is, the scary message comes out from the CEO, right? Ground's going to crumble. We're all going to a dumpster, et cetera. What did your team look like, or what did the team that implemented this look like? And
sure.
And did they go to one site and then you kind of drop one off, or did you grow or have that work out?
Wow, great, great question, Jeff. First of all, it was a new team, so it didn't exist before. So I initially started with a team leader for each of those work streams to kind of build out a strategy. And early on, we had made the decision in Envista that we were not going to have a large central group. I mean, first of all, we're not that big of a company. We're only total of 5,000 employees and 13 sites. Different than one of our sister companies, Georgia Pacific, which is huge. I mean, they have, I don't know exactly how many now, but probably 40,000 employees. They have 125 sites. So they made the decision early on that they were going to have a relatively large central group. And particularly in the space of process control, they were going to have a central team that does monitoring diagnostics of all 125 of their plants. So it's working well for them. So it's not, there's no right or wrong. But we decided in Envista that we were only going to have a small core team and try to build a small capability. So today in my transformation group, I actually have ops excellence and ops transformation. But in ops transformation, I think I have 22 total people. And don't intend to get any bigger than that. Actually, over time, we'll get smaller as some of these efforts complete. But then there are a couple of things. So you met Josh earlier. He's on the team that's driving in process control a particular focus called state-based controls. Well, that's a large effort that we had no capability in before, so we built a team for that. So that's a central team that's going to drive that. It's going to take three to 4 years to do that. So that's a capability we built in the central group. But in our connected worker space, I've only got two. Driving the VCE efforts and then driving the AR/VR effort. But there we're really looking for the green curves of our folks at the sites. So we're not going to have a large capability there. We want the capability to be at the site. So a long rambling answer to your question of we first developed our, you know, our kind of strategy of our four work streams. So what was kind of in scope and what was out of scope. And then particular aspects of those, we said, you know, this is new to the site. They don't have the capability. We'll build that like we're doing in state-based controls. But then other spaces, our worker bees are, you know, our implementers are at the site. And so we just need enough of a core capability to guide and steer. And to your point around, you know, did you drop somebody off at each of the sites? We started with our big sites. So out of our 13 sites, we got five that are, you know, by far the largest. And there we began was that VCE tool, just trying to really engage a large cross section of the sites in something that was reasonably immersive, and tried to really introduce folks to what is possible. You know, why is the ground crumbling beneath our feet? You know, because of what's happening in the digital space. And in some cases, you know, we encounter folks that, you know, had been reading about that and been excited, and, you know, wow, I've been curious about, you know, drones, for example. We do a lot of drone work for inspections and things like that. Where other cases, people say, you know, well, what are you talking about? I trained to do this job 20 years ago, and, you know, I plan to be here 10 more years doing what I've done for the last 20 years. And those are the kind of folks you really have to, you know, get in front of and say, you know, well, you know, won't be doing it here for the next 10 years because we're changing and you need to change with it, is part of the key message.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
All right. And we have time for, I think, just one more. And it's from Andy Davis, who's with Owens Corning. And he asks, presumably some of the tools and technologies that you've implemented had existing tools that existed within your operations that did at least a portion of what those new tools were intended to do, though maybe less effectively or with less overall capability. But the people were used to those existing tools. How did you overcome momentum needed to get people to adopt new tools and take on that learning curve?
Great question, Andy. I'll mention two areas. You know, in process control, we had already done a lot of advanced process control and still do. I mean, that's an excellent approach, and we take a lot of advantage of that. And in advanced process control, typically almost always focuses on the run state. You know, so. You know, when things are lined out and you're running good and you got everything kind of in the zone, you kick it into cruise control and it's now operating on advanced process control. State-based controls is much broader. I mean, it looks at all of the states, so it's not just the run state, but the startup state, the shutdown state, the response to upset state, and so you want to incorporate that mindset or that approach into the entire operation, not just part of the operation. And, you know, and that's taken a while for folks to get their hands around that. And, you know, people say, well, you know, isn't it just this, or we do this, you know, how's this different? And so it's a little bit of an education to show how it's different. The other area is in that asset performance management, where, you know, we'll be using a sensor to look at vibration, as opposed to, you know, an operator with a lot of experience, you know, and kudos to them. You know, some folks just really have a good ear for it. You know, and you say, well, you know, why do we need this new fancy, you know, sensor? I can listen to that and know when it's going bad. And you know, my answer to that is absolutely. And you know, kudos to you that you can do that. I said, but how many times do you walk by that a day? You know, I look at that three times a day religiously. Great, that sensor is looking at it 24/7, and you know, and it can see things that, you know, that you're not seeing, you know, or certainly can look at it all the time. So, you know, and I think, you know, one of the key messages is for us is we are not necessarily trying to, long term, we will have less people than we have today. But our focus is not we're going to replace people with machines. Our focus is that red and green curve, that we're going to free you up from the things that a machine can do better. I call it the four D's, things that are dirty, difficult, dangerous, or disinteresting. Those are the things that we want to automate. And we want, you know, the human to be able to do the things that you're really good at and then to continue to learn, which is the green curve. So to the extent that we wind up, you know, down a row with less people, they're the people that say, you know, hey, this isn't the job I hired on to do. And, you know, I don't want to learn new things. Well, you know, if you don't have a green curve, if you're choosing not to embrace it, well, then, yeah, you might not have a job here long term. But if you, you know, do want to keep learning things and you want to, embrace the future, you know, we need you all the time, you know. So it is, you know, it is that message to really kind of take the fear out of automation and say, you know, this is the way to make the overall job better and to make your job more interesting. I mean, yeah, you can walk by that and listen to it and hear about it, but while you're doing all that, you know, you're not doing other things. So let the online sensor do that, and then you do the analysis. You know, you help interpret that curve and show, you know, do we need to work on it now or can we work on it a month from now by continuing to trace it? So I mean, it's, you know, it's an ongoing dialogue. You know, there's people out there that, you know, are still struggling with that message, but you know, the alternative is to be in the dumpster, as Mr. Koch would say. So I choose to change.
He does not mince words.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I just, given what you've just said, I want to do a quick plug again for our Digital Futures Conference. And excuse me, everyone, for plugging it again. But we've just started putting together a panel that was originally going to be focused on kind of talent issues and, you know, which is huge, obviously. But we're kind of moving it on to kind of humans and machines and that green curve, actually talking about what the future of work is going to be and how to make work more enriching and getting rid of those 4D jobs. So this is something we'll be touching on again. So great. Thanks for giving me a great segue.
Super.
All right. So again, huge thank you, Jerry, for giving us your time today. We've got some feedback from Jeff Strahan, from Milliken, who asked the question. He says, great talk, top-notch stuff. So we really appreciate you giving us your time and all of your insights. And we will be making this available so you can share it with your colleagues. And we hope that you do. But until then, we'll have another talk September 17th. I will let you know who the guest will be then. And I hope everyone stays safe and sane until then. And again, thanks so much, Jerry.
Oh, it was great being here. Thanks. Appreciate the input.
Thanks. Bye-bye.